for your own safety.
You're not going crazy, Arthur. You're going sane in a crazy world.
Good news, everyone. I'm sending you on an extremely controversial mission.
Controversial?
Oh my, no.
You don't have a reflection.
Are you a vampire?
Am I a vampire?
It certainly is not every day that a man attains the exalted position of temporary honorary colonel. I thank you.
Welcome to Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood, the mostly weekly podcast by the Court of Nerds that brings news, reviews, and topics from the world of geekdom. The views expressed in this podcast are solely that of Kevin and not that of the Court of Nerds at large, and is meant for entertainment purposes only. Now your host for this misadventure, Mr. Sledge.
Hello and welcome to episode I don't even know anymore of Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood. Man, I've been missing in action for a while now, and I am sorry about that. I could make excuses, but most of them are only partially true, and some would be outright lies. So let's skip all that, shall we? A lot has happened since I was last here. A giant flaw in Intel and AMD kernel architecture was made public. The Consumers Electronics Show took place. The Detroit International Auto Show told us the future is filled with even more trucks. And teenagers decided to take the Tide Pod Challenge. Which makes this week's sponsor a little awkward.
Thanks to a revolutionary formulation, this little pad deep cleans in standard and high efficiency washers.
And inside the GI tract of adolescence.
How can it work in both, you ask? Tide Pods are specially designed with a compacted cleaning system that cleans deep down with very few suds.
It also looks like candy for the credulous.
That makes Tide Pods safe and effective for all washers.
In Louisiana, they use it for capital punishment.
So if you have a classic like this one, great. Just toss a pack into the drum.
Now when she says drum, she doesn't mean mouth.
If you have a new HE model, same thing. Just toss a pack directly into the drum. That's right, the drum, not the drawer.
Meaning it's not a suppository either.
And toss in the pack before you load your laundry. Also, close the package after use. And store in a dry, safe place out of children's reach.
Let's be honest, when Rob Gronkowski is doing PSAs for this, you know we're done as a culture.
Tide Pods. Pop in. Stand out.
Now before I get to the news, I want to make a statement to YouTube and Google. It is commendable that you have acted so quickly in removing user videos supporting and promoting the Tide Pod Challenge. The sad part is that you only did this because of heightened social media scrutiny. You, just in the past 10 days, have decided to quarantine hate speech. Imagine if you were swifter to act on banning neo-Nazi propaganda and took the microphone away from white supremacists. Maybe our political landscape would look a bit differently. Okay, back to the news.
And now, the news!
In the opening, I talked about the architecture flaw that came to light about Intel and even some AMD processors. The flaw affects all Intel manufactured chipsets made over the past 22 years and can effectively give access to a third party with everything on your computer. The two variants of this kind of hacking attacks have been dubbed Meltdown and Spectre, Spectre being the more insidious and harder to fix. This affects essentially everything with a processor in it, from your iPhone to your Google Nest. Fixes have been rolling out like crazy for manufacturers and OS companies, but the side effects is almost certainly a bit of processor slowdown, which can have a huge drop-off in older processors, sometimes up to 40% when cache loads get large. It might even look like we might lose more than a generation in efficiency too, because Intel's 8th generation Coffee Lake has the flaw as well. While PR machines from Intel, Apple, Samsung, and Microsoft have been in high gear trying to calm people's nerves, Linux creator Linus Torvalds is taking a more alarmist approach. In a message to the Linux kernel mailing list over the weekend, Torvalds has expressed his dismay to Intel security updates to protect against the major Spectre variant 2 CPU vulnerability. Quote, "What the fuck is going on?" asked Torvalds, claiming that Intel is doing insane things that do not make sense to protect against the Spectre variant 2 vulnerability. Quote, "As it is, the patches are complete and utter garbage," claims Torvald. At the heart of the issue is Intel's approach to Spectre and the associated fixes. The Register points out that Intel's future processors, at least for a few years, will ship vulnerable to Spectre and will include a flag that can be set in software so operating systems can protect against the vulnerabilities. Intel is essentially treating protection against Spectre as an optional feature rather than a security bug that should be addressed. Torvalds isn't happy with Intel's Spectre fix approach. Quote, "Is Intel really planning on making this shit architectural?" asked Torvalds. "Has anybody talked to them and told them that they are fucking insane? Please, any Intel engineers, talk to your managers." End quote. Torvalds clearly wants Intel to flag the operating systems that its future chips aren't vulnerable so that software patches and workarounds aren't necessarily applied alongside a potential hit to performance. Quote, "We take feedback on industry partners seriously," end quote, says Intel spokesperson in a statement to The Register. Quote, "We are actively engaging with the Linux Computing, including Linus, as we seek to work together on solutions," end quote. Torvalds' critical words about Intel came after weeks the chipmaker issuing a carefully worded statement in relation to performance impacts with its Spectre fixes. While Intel promised 90% of the machines would have fixes available by now, it turns out that some of the patches have been making machines spontaneously reboot. Intel is now recommending that people hold off on updating firmware until the company has addressed the issues. Intel says that it has identified the issue behind the reboots on Broadwell and Haswell processors and is working towards releasing an update. Ivy Bridge, Sandy Bridge, Skylake, and Kaby Lake processors are also affected, and Intel says that it's actively working on developing solutions for those processors, too. Microsoft was forced to halt its own patches for some AMD systems recently after some PCs were unbootable following the software updates. It's clear the industry as a whole has been racing to fix Meltdown and Spectre, and the usual testing hasn't been as rigorous as a result. What I want to know is, when can I buy a new processor that doesn't have these flaws baked in? Oh, you don't have a time frame, do you? Well, shit.
I'm sorry, Batman. That's classified. My hands are tied.
Strange that you would put it just that way.
Why?
A fringe hacker group recently accessed information about key Argus employees. Some of them seem to be engaged in, shall we say, questionable nocturnal activities.
Are you blackmailing me?
I'm explaining that I can help stop a crime in exchange for some information.
Fine. But for the record, what Mistress Ilsa does for me is considered therapy. In some countries.
This year's CES was full of surprises, from heavy rains with a convention center blackout to pole dancing robots. I'm sure you've all had time to see some of the crazy things that have come out of the show, but what I like to look at is how the show has changed, or more accurately, what has had less of a presence this year. 8 years ago, 3D televisions were all the rage at the show. 3 years ago, VR and AR were everywhere. Last year, Alexa was put in everything. This year, well, I guess it was Google Assistant's turn. We haven't seen the most of Alexa promised products that were announced last year, while Google has slowly been tweaking their AI to work with more things, while Amazon sat asleep at the wheel. Google also got its assistant into a wide variety of products, ranging from speakers, screens, headphones, pet feeders, and infotainment systems, TVs with a light switch, and yeah, even more speakers. You really couldn't go more than a few minutes this year without hearing about a new Google Assistant integration. While Alexa may have been integrated into more things, roughly 4,000 at this point, and Google only has about 1,500, more people paid attention to Google Assistant this year than any year before. Now, I could continue to talk about TVs, phones, computers, but I'm actually going to talk about something that made a small viral splash at CES attendees. The Aflac Duck. Point blank, a lot of CES is just useless junk, and you would expect something with an Aflac branding all over to be equally bad. Instead, we got a heartwarming robot toy that has no camera, no voice assistant, and no games. It does, however, have the capability of comforting young children battling cancer to help them feel less alone in their fight and take control of their emotions in a situation that's very uncontrollable. The toy won't be sold, but instead given to children at care centers nationally for free. Good on you, Robo Aflac Ducky. Good on you.
Don't bother yelling for help. This dump is condemned. Nobody in the whole building but us, Nightwig.
Wing.
Eh?
It's Nightwing.
Really? Huh. Guess I was thinking of that goofy mullet you used to have. Yeesh, that was like a whole decade of bad hair days.
The Detroit International Auto Show is to gearheads what San Diego Comic-Con is to comic geeks. It becomes a little bit less about cars every year, and more about the stuff that goes with them. That is to be expected, because technology is so integrated in our everyday lives that keeping them in separate spheres sometimes seems antithetical. Now, I could talk about the return of the Ford Ranger, or the G-Wagon frozen in a block of ice, but no, I'm going to talk about Google Assistant and Siri. I know. Bear with me. While Apple CarPlay and Android Audio have been slowly making their way into manufacturers' infotainment systems, Toyota finally decided that they would add CarPlay because it had attributed the downturn in Camry sales to their weird proprietary infotainment system. Mercedes-Benz has showcased the best infotainment integration of Android Audio and Google Assistant I've seen at CES. Not to be outdone, BMW unveiled their own system, which has even slicker displays in Detroit. But with a caveat. They are making their wireless CarPlay a subscription. You heard that right. They are making the very act of connecting your phone that you own to a car that you own something you pay money for annually. $80 to be precise. What's even more insane is that Android Audio and Apple CarPlay essentially run 90% of all the operations off of your phone. Not on your car's infotainment system. It's mostly screen projection with some UI overlays. That is nuts. The whole point of these systems is to offer drivers a safer way to access infotainment features like calling, messaging, navigation, and audio playback while in the car. It would seem insane and illegal to charge a subscription for other safety technology like seatbelts in cars. I'm not suggesting automakers be forced to offer CarPlay or Android Audio, but I think it's bad business, and I hope that the market response proves that. BMW is spinning this decision in a way that gives drivers more choice, which doesn't really mean anything. Vendors regularly offer drivers their own infotainment systems, plus Apple CarPlay and Android Audio, without forcing customers to choose and subscribe. BMW is placing support for phone-specific features behind a paywall in a new territory for CarPlay and is ill-advised. CarPlay effectively limits distractions in the car by silencing unnecessary alerts like email, while making messaging work like voice over Siri. BMW should be embracing that in the interest of protecting drivers and discouraging distracted driving, not discouraging drivers from discovering and continuing to use CarPlay with goofy subscription fees. This is stupid. But let's be honest, Beamer drivers, they're gonna pay it anyway.
It's funny. I always kind of thought you and Batman didn't like girls.
Wait, what?
You know, that book. With the headlights and the eyeball gouging. I had to write a paper on it back in college. Got a B minus.
Look, Harley,
Pretty lonely these last few months, if you know what I mean. You don't meet a lot of likely prospects at Super Babes. I'm kind of choosy.
I'm not saying I don't want to, because that could be nice. All sorts of wrong, but nice. Right now, I just really need to find poison.
Shh. Face it, sugar. I got something you want, and you sure as shooting got something I want. So be a good boy, and maybe Mama will give you a cookie.
The things I do for Gotham.
I'm taking that as a yes.
In reviews this week, if you haven't figured out with all the sound drops, I'm reviewing a new-ish movie, Batman and Harley Quinn by DC Animation Studios. Now, I know this came out in August of last year. Sorry, I was just slow to reviewing it. At its core, director Sam Lui and writers Bruce Timm and Jim Craig's Batman and Harley Quinn is a reworked, stretched-out remake of Batman the Animated Series episode Harley Quinnade. That 1994 episode concerned Batman freeing Harley from Arkham to help him track down the Joker, who had stolen a nuclear bomb with the intent of blowing up Gotham. This time around, Miss Quinzel is on the straight and narrow, but Batman and Nightwing still need her help to track down Poison Ivy as she teams up with Floronic Man, that is Kevin Michael Richardson, with a scheme to turn every human into a plant. Oddly enough, the 68-minute feature, minus credits, which are about 5 minutes long and have like a couple of cutscenes, kind of funny, is a very talkative little caper, and with time enough for two full-length musical numbers at a dive bar, but with little time for actual character development and introspection. The picture takes a bit to find its groove, and it is essentially the first Batman the Animated Series movie episode since The Mystery of the Batwoman back in 2003. Even Kevin Conroy, who never stopped voicing this character, seems initially ill at ease playing this Batman in this world. At its core, this is a two-part episode of the new Batman Adventures, slowed down to about 3/4 speed so as to make it a, you know, that magical 65-minute number mark to qualify as a feature movie. The film is choppy, disjointed, and alternating between talky and oddly silent. There are even expository dialogue exchanges where you'd swear folks forgot their lines and had to wing it to make it like that time length. Part of the issue is that, quite frankly, Batman and Nightwing are assholes this time around. Batman especially is abrasive, cold, and rather unsympathetic to the former enemy gone straight, while Nightwing can't decide whether to belittle or screw her. The film tries to offer a story about Harley being undervalued and sexualized by the men around her, even as the movie goes all in on its male gaze right from the start. While these two Cape Crusading actors voice their defining roles, Melissa Ranch from Big Bang Theory voices Harley Quinn, while Patchett Brewster from Criminal Minds voices Poison Ivy. They're both excellent actors, but considering the nostalgia-driven nature of this project, I can only wonder why Arlene Sorkin and Diane Pershing weren't brought back. If Julie Newmar can voice Catwoman in The Return of the Caped Crusaders, then... And the picture does toe the line between being its own thing and being a kind of love letter to Harley Quinn character and the legacy of Batman the Animated Series. There is a wonderful second act, but where our heroes waltz into a dive bar for villains, and every single extra is a minor villain or henchman or henchwoman from the Batman the Animated Series episodes. Now, several of these characters, like Two-Face's freckled henchman, Captain Clown, died in their respective episodes, but let's just go with it. And I like the phone call with Booster Gold as well. While the picture earns its PG-13 via adult language and lots of first-act sexual content, it is rather light on action and violence. The film wants to be more of a detective story than an action spectacular, even if the mystery component essentially boils down to asking a source for an address. But there's too much expositional dialogue and awkward comedic beats in this place of an adventure. The picture doesn't offer Batman or Nightwing at their best, and it's a little odd that Poison Ivy would feel conflicted about the violence she is unleashing and threatening to unleash. But Raunch tries her best to save the film through sheer force of will. This Harley is totally disconnected from the Joker. He is barely referenced at all, and a walking tightrope between a more adult interpretation of the, you know, TV Y7, the animated film back in the 90s, a figure of evil that we first met back in 1992. More screen time between her and Brewster's Poison Ivy would have helped this immensely. Batman and Harley Quinn is a slight entry into the DCAU library, but that is the intent. I wish the pacing was tighter, and I wish there was more of an emotional ending rather than the amounts of what amounts to abrupt punchlines. Like, the ending just kind of ended. I begin to wonder how much of the Batman the Animated Series inherent goodness, especially in terms of not making Batman into a jerk, was due to Bruce Timm and friends not being able to go as hardcore as they might have liked due to Fox's BSNP at the time. But that's a conversation for another day. I can't help but noticing Harley Quinnade did it better 23 years ago and in just 20 minutes. So, in a range out of 10, I mean, still watch it, I'd give it about a 7 out of 10.
Well, that was a big-ass bucket of nothing.
That's it for this week's episode of Mr. Sledge's Neighborhood. If you haven't given Reverse Centaurs a listen yet, give it a listen now. Find out how my character gives a mythical creature an unexpected colonoscopy. I'm Kevin from The Court of Nerds saying, like the sands of an hourglass, so are the days of our lives. Unless you have kidney stones. Bye! 'Cause it doesn't matter in the gene.